And as you'll see as I try to answer you, I'm not much at operating these things either, but you have a unique facility for getting points across, and I'm sure all of us will treasure your remarks. I plan to keep them as part of a library I hope I can build up in exchanging things with you, and we'll take them off your tape so I can return your tape complete with your party remarks. By the way, I'm going to take the liberty and include these as part of the tape I keep. As I listen to you, so many thoughts and so many memories flash through my mind, it's hard to know where to begin. But let me just make several things clear. First among them, and most important, is you have something to give to me and to Rowing that no amount of experience and exposure can equal, and that's an understanding of just what is good about the sport. I couldn't agree with you more when you say crew is a way of life. We sort of joke about this here at Kent, saying crew isn't a sport, it's a way of life, but I wonder how many of the people really stop and think what they're saying. The second is for you to feel you shouldn't or couldn't offer comments on Kent crews you've seen. I can't think of anyone more qualified to do so, and I really treasure your criticisms. As always, you coin phrases such as feline elasticity and the stroke looking like a general, along with other what I'll call Percy-isms with a Fairbrainish tone to them. And anyway, I just think that you hit so many things so squarely, and things that I believe in so very strongly. There are many things that scare me about the last two Kent crews, and maybe if you'll put up with me for a couple of minutes, I'll try to tell you what they are. I realized we were in trouble with the 71 crew fairly early on in the year, and looking back, wish I'd put my foot down and kept us from coming aboard. On the other hand, maybe it was good that we went over and got our lessons. You'll have to excuse some background noises. Your friend Todd is down in the cellar trying to activate a bugle. But anyway, I'm afraid my own desire is to expose young men to the joys and the experience of Henley sometimes gets in the way of good sense when it comes to a particular crew being really qualified to go. Now that we finally made the grade, maybe I'll be a little more critical and selective. I guess the thing that bothers me most about the 71 crew is that while I knew we were in trouble, I really didn't know what to do to get us out of trouble. I used the excuse that we were so indoctrinated into it that I couldn't that late in the season, but I'm not sure that's the answer. On the other hand, you start stepping back and being really analytical about who was in the boat and who made it go and things like that, and there were some real weak links in that crew, and they were in real contrast to what we had this year although I guess it's always easy to be critical when you lose than when you win. One of the things that just makes me sick about the American society today is the fact that I think basically they're brought up as soft people, and I like to think that the Crews are exceptions to this, but every once in a while you find indications of just how soft they are. I think that when we got overseas in 71, the fact that life wasn't as orderly and maybe as plush as it is in the States bothered some of these people. They were unable to sort of roll with things, and I think this reflected, in fact I know this reflected in their rowing as much as it did off the water. When you come to Kent this spring, you'll see the sort of unusual role or place the crew occupies in a school where athletics are very important. American football, ice hockey, and basketball are much more professional type sports. Even at Kent, we go out and recruit young men who are good players and so forth, and if we don't, we find ourselves losing every week, and therefore school morale gets a little down and things like this. But on the other hand, crew is something we really do on our own, and I guess it's a feeling of satisfaction here, plus the fact that I guess we do it as well as anybody does in this country, that makes experiences like Henley and other things that come from rowing just an unforgettable part of I know my life, and I'm pretty sure of the lives of those who are fortunate enough to come to England and be with you and with others. I'm really jumping around on this, but basically what I'm saying is that the crew in this country, while it is a struggling sport in many, many ways, I still think embodies the best of sportsmanship and amateurism and all the good things that make a sport worthwhile, plus teaching so many, many valuable lessons that, as you say, can be used far beyond rowing and be used in virtually every aspect of life. I think back to a gentleman I had the good fortune of knowing and working with, who I guess to me would be the same as Steve Fairburn is to you. That person is Rusty Callow, who was coach for many years at the University of Pennsylvania, and then later at the U.S. Naval Academy, where he produced what I guess is still regarded as fine a crew as the world has ever seen, namely the 1952 Navy Olympic crew. Not only were these young men fine athletes, but they were gentlemen in the best sense of the word. They were well disciplined, they were sportsmen, they were outgoing, they were humble, they were just really top people, and I think the main reason they were, in addition to the fact that basically they were this kind of guy anyway, was the influence that Rusty Callow had. I was coaching for the first time as an undergraduate at Dartmouth, and I'm sure Rusty took pity on the fact that we'd have to put up with student coaching, and he used to come out on the launch with me when we trained at the Naval Academy in the spring. He was great in teaching technique, but I guess the things I remember the most are the values he tried to teach and did teach as far as what you put on into a sport like crew, where the individual stardom that seems so much a part of most American athletics is really non-existent. It's the team effort in every sense of the word, and not only as you put the oars in the water, but just all the thinking that goes on behind it. I've tried to carry this through in crews I've coached both at Dartmouth and here at Kent. Here at Kent, it was pretty easy to pick up this kind of thinking because Tote and before him Father Sill had really established this as a tradition in Kent crews. We had some times not too long ago where the crew were rather cocky here on the campus and were referred to as the Tin Gods. I think this is a unfortunate situation, one that wasn't entirely imagined by the other people in the school, and one that sort of separated the crew from the school, when I feel the crew should be the example of everything that's good about Kent. In any event, what I've tried to do is teach young men that they should be examples in everything they do, and I think for the most part our young men have been. As you say, it's been a difficult time in America with the influence of drugs, long hair, questioning of authority. In fact, in some sports we even have the players questioning the coaching, and as you, I believe, know, our whole coaching setup is different from yours, in that one coach stays with his team throughout the whole season, and it just is incredible to me that the authority of respected coaches can be put to the task. But nonetheless, this has been the case. Anyway, I guess what I'm trying to say is that you and I understand what crew is in terms of what it means to people and what lessons can be learned from it. And it's sometimes a real struggle to perpetuate this at the school level in this country. I think we have been successful, but oh, such things as Kent marching in step and being somewhat uniform in what they wear to row in, and being relatively silent and, as some people would say, mechanical in the handling of equipment. We get some razzing on this in this country, and yet I feel that this kind of discipline, while you're around boats, before you get in them and start rowing, can be reflected in just how you perform on the water. Your philosophy about coming off a year like last year is just impeccable in its good sense. I've learned the hard way that years when we think we should be good, we're not, and years when maybe we aren't quite as good, on paper anyway, we end up with a pretty good crew. I think there's a certain hunger and dedication and so forth that comes to the person trying to get to the top, and a real danger of a complacency that sort of overtakes people who are sitting on the top. So you can rest easy if you think we're going to think we can step off from last year's high point and go from there. I'm fully aware that we've got to rebuild and start all over again, and I think the boys are too, which is an exciting prospect of trying to keep things going for this year. Already they are hard at work off the water, and I think if we can maintain a technique that obviously was pretty effective, I think we can do something. Off-water training is an interesting thing with us. As I think I've told you, we do not have a rowing program in the fall term. primarily because our boys are all involved in other sports. As a result, it might appear that we would be behind our opponents, all of whom do have fall rowing programs. But I think at this level, just the opposite is true. I just try to get the point across that what we try to do is everybody show up for early practice ready to row and in his best physical condition as he can be. We have such things as a tank and one of these ergometers that you'll get a big kick out of when you see it, and other off-water training devices that are available to the crew. We don't, however, force them into this. I feel that one of the strengths in rowing at Kent is the fact that there is a real pride in being part of the crew and a real fear of being part of a weak crew. So you get enough of the boys working hard, so they set a level and a standard for the others to try to measure up to. And then, of course, they're improving all the time, so it becomes a real race as to who is going to be the fittest and who's going to be most ready to row. I feel that schoolboys who are put on the water for two terms, at least American schoolboys, while they have the dedication, they haven't got the length of concentration that can make them improve steadily over a long period of time. And I think this is reflected in other crews that I see in the States. Maybe their rowing is better because of their fall program, but I don't really think so. And I feel that it gets a lot of them stale by the time they get out of school, so they aren't really that interested in keeping going with a sport. And I think if schools like Kent and other schools who have good rowing programs don't perpetuate crew, don't encourage their oarsmen to continue it at university level and beyond, then we're really missing the boat somewhere. I think a boy who stops rowing, and we have many of these as well as other schools, after he gets out of school, really loses something. And I don't think what it means is that he hasn't really grasped all the intangibles that we both talk about so often.
Another interesting factor here is the boy who does go from Kent or another school on the university level to row, and the position he finds himself in when on a squad of people where most everybody hasn't rowed before. This can be a very awkward situation for both the young man and for the coach involved, and we try to give advice here along these lines that when you go off to college, don't say anything about your rowing. They'll find it out soon enough if you're any good, and I think the guy who goes around bragging, which is what it is, even if he doesn't say anything, is quickly separated from the others. And when this happens, I think this too is an unfortunate situation. Some guys have to learn the hard way, but I think those who are most successful and most well accepted seem to go on and just fit into programs without saying much of anything. I think a situation that's true here, maybe unlike the big British universities, is that most of our college oarsmen haven't rowed before they got to university. And I think this is one of the things that makes rowing such a great sport in the United States, because our other sports are so professional, with scholarships and money being paid to do this and that, to come and play this and that sport, whereas in rowing you don't have any of it. And a boy who's a good athlete in other sports in his secondary school can come on to university and come out for crew and start even with pretty much everybody on the squad. And it's, as you've seen at Henley many times, the raw material that comes through this kind of thing is just incredible. And raw material it is in many cases, because I think some of our coaching techniques are really weird, and I include myself in this, so maybe I ought to put myself right at the head of the list. One of the things I'm trying to do through our National Association, which is the equivalent of the ARA, is to develop a coaching certification system, and certainly we're taking a few pages from your coaching award scheme. I think this would really be healthy in that it would possibly force some of our better coaches, and we do have some good ones, to share their knowledge and to bring the whole level of coaching up. And then when you get this wonderful raw material I speak of, they do something with it, because I can't imagine a situation where good material comes out for a sport that they know very little about, and either they're unsuccessful or, even more important, they're uncomfortable and unhappy in what they're doing, and certainly they're not going to keep going with it. So one of the things we face on a national basis is to get the whole level of coaching up, and I'm hoping this system, if it's accepted, and that's a big if with the rather non-cooperative atmosphere that exists in many of our rowing circles, if we get this accepted, I think it'll be a real plus. I'm sure your rowing association and so forth gets bogged down in politics just the same as ours does. I'll reserve comments on this phase of the sport in this country till another tape. I'm a little hesitant of talking about technique with you, because I think you describe it so much better than I ever could, and I honestly feel but I'm still very much a babe in the woods when it comes to sitting down and justifying a technique. I think the thing that bothers me is I don't think any two of our crews have ever rowed exactly the same. This might be a good thing in some respects, but here we have something from last year where I'd love to turn another crew out that rows exactly the same as they did, and yet I'm not really sure I can. And please correct me if I'm wrong in some of my assumptions, but I think that there's an awful lot riding in who your stroke oar is. I like to think I have a feel for crew, in other words, can feel a boat even from the launch when it's going and when it isn't. I think I've seen enough crews to know what the rhythm and grace and, as you call it, elasticity and things like this of a crew is, and be able to tell whether it's moving because it is graceful or moving just because it's got raw power. I'm afraid that several of our crews that have been successful primarily just because of raw power. What I have the most problem with them, or with teaching them, is both ends of the stroke. You've made it very obvious what we did wrong with the catch. And this came out of an interesting series that went over about 2 years. A series that I can trace back very easily to, let's say it started with our 69 crew, where we had the two English, I guess 68 crew, where we had the two English, no, 69 crew, where we had the two English boys, Percival from Eton and Buckley from Shrewsbury, in the boat. And we were taking the water very, very differently with our own boys versus these. And what I thought was going on is as they came up for the catch and started a roll up or square up, as we call it, there was a real laziness to the way they squared the blade and took the water. So as you do when you get out there, you're scribing a circle with your hands as you set the blade. We worked on our theory of tightening up this circle, making it smaller. And I think we got that crew rowing together. Then in 69, they weren't there. And Freddie Shock was stroking the boat. And I don't know if you remember him, the great big fellow. His father was the Princeton coach. Fred has gone on to row at the University of Washington, in the state of Washington, where he rowed on a Pan American crew. And he's been a successful oarsman. Anyway. Freddie was stroking the boat, and we got the catch a little more pronounced. In 70, we had a boy stroking the crew who was about 148 pounds and just tougher than nails. And he had a pretty nice rhythm to him. He was, I think the reason he ended up in the stroke seat primarily is because he was a winner. He was a wrestler and just hated to lose. And he was a real student of the sport. And he got on this more with grace, but we still had this sort of pronounced catch, which, anyway, just following this progression along, came to its extreme in 71. And as I said earlier, I guess the thing that bothers me the most about that crew is that I was unable or didn't do something about correcting this fault before it got so ingrained. Anyway, that's history. You take Murray Beach, though. Who was the stroke of last year's boat, and your description of him as a general is just perfect, because he had that boat under control in every single way. They had complete faith in him. They followed his example both on and off the water, and he's just an incredible young man. Anyway, Murray and I spent an awful lot of time trying to feel out what we were trying to do. And Murray, as I say, is a real student of the sport and understands certain aspects of it a lot better than I do. And I think what we got was a really efficient way of setting the blade and then exploding with the legs, not letting the back and the arms and so forth get away from us. But the legs were just, when that boat was moving the fastest, the legs were really down. And it's interesting to watch movies of them or TV tapes of them, because the people who were moving the boat, namely, well, the stern four or five, the stern five before we had to make the change, but the stern four at Henley carried that boat in terms of power. And there's real differences in the boat as with the legs going down, which I know is bad, but we had this excellent example at one end of the boat, and then a couple of guys up in the bow seats that were just really keeping up. All the films I have show the bowman as being very short, being laid out of bow with his body, having his body angle really poorly set. And I tried to get him out of the boat a couple of times, and the boat just didn't go without him in there. I guess this is one of those unique happenings, and I'm sure you've seen several of them, many of them in your career, where these eight guys just belong together. And I think one of the other things we tried to do a lot more of last year, and your exercise with the one-hand rowing is going to be good for this, was to hold the water, to squeeze it off, and to flow around the turn or the release. I found this is where our old American style, or conibear as it's called in this country, was possibly easier to coach at this part of the stroke, because all you do, you get them in there, and the big thing is get the hands out of balance. It really didn't matter if you rushed them out. But anyway, trying to get this flow and get everybody coming together is something that, maybe I'm making an excuse, but it's something that just happens. I think you can show them and talk to them about it, but if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. Well, basically, what our stroke is an attempt to, starting at the release, the oars out of the water, the blade is clear, the hands go away and take the arms and shoulders, and then the seat, and then a steady motion down the slide to the point where you're picking off the next stroke. And one of the things we said is that your blade has got to be set for the next stroke as you were still going into the stern, so that once the the recoil or the power thing comes on, there's something to pry against or pull against, and that the blade is already set. Then as soon as they feel pressure on the blade, and I tell them that they should try to feel it in the small of their back, the legs explode and the arms start drawing. And then I have tried to say the arms have got to draw in high. As you get in near the release, you start pulling up, or get the sensation that you're pulling up. Then it's really important, as far as I'm concerned, that the blade get out cleanly, and this is done by pushing down. We have a series of exercises you've probably seen us use, and one of them, or the initial one, is to have the blade square in the water at the finish position, and then the blade just merely is pushed down to pop clear of the water. Now, perhaps that's enough on style, and I'll let you pick away at that. But because I'm really concerned that we're going to lose or not be able to maintain the rhythm that we had this past year, and it'll kill us if we don't. The boy rowed went from 6 to 5 in the boat this year. The young fellow will probably stroke the boat. I hope he does anyway, because I'll have him for 2 years if he does, and he's a real competitor, and I think will command the respect, although he won't be the take charge guy that Murray was. And I think the seven man, your friend with the great grimace on his face, who's the captain this year, is a take charge guy in terms of example and willingness to work and all this. So maybe between the two of these fellows we can replace Murray. I don't know. I think he's an individual that just comes along every now and then. A nice compliment came about him from Harvard, where he is, saying he and the boy who rode 7 in that Harvard freshman boat last year are two of the finest young men that Harvard has ever had rowing for them. This doesn't necessarily mean they're that competent as oarsmen, although I think they're pretty good, but just in terms of people, they're pretty unusual guys. And I guess if a great university like Harvard feels this way about two of our people, then we must be doing something right. Percy, I'd like to spend some time talking to you about boat design and oar design and things like this, where I know we have some different views, but I think, to me anyway, this would really be a wonderful session to have. Again, I think you know so much more, in fact, I know you know so much more about the whys of it than I do. I think one of the things that I know you probably feel about us, or me in particular, is the gimmickry that we go through. It seems we've got to have something new every time we come. Well, I'll plead guilty to this in some respect. One of the things I've tried to do with our whole program is to keep the boys and myself believing that we are progressing, that if there's something new and worthwhile around, darn it, we're going to try it, because I think that, well, this complacency or unwillingness to experiment, and I'm talking about on this side of the ocean now, has been one of the real downfalls of our rowing. We went along with the Conabare style and our Pocock boats and so on and so forth, right up through the 1960, or to the 1960 Olympics, and then all of a sudden, whango, we got our comeuppance by the Germans, and then since then, we've been trying to keep up with them, and I'm sure copy them in many ways. I don't think we've got the temperament in our people to do it the way they do, and nor do I think they necessarily are right in all their ways. But anyway, be that as it may, we certainly have changed, and I think Kent is probably, as far as school boards are concerned, as innovative or experimental or whatever you want to call it as any crew in the country. Luckily, we have alumni who are generous to us, and therefore funds have not prevented us from this. This ergometer is a perfect example. It is something that cost $2,000 in this country, and yet we were able to get one when we wanted it. It's a fantastic machine, and I'll spend some time talking about it. It very, very much simulates rowing, much better than the tank does. But the things that you can do with this thing, both as a physical, but in my opinion, in a sense more important, psychological measure and something that you can work against, it's just incredible. But I won't start on this now. If I do, I haven't got too many arrows left in my quiver, and I'll my subsequent tapes will be pretty short and maybe even duller than this one. Let's talk just for a second about your pending trip to Kent. Notice I'm saying that this is all set, and I think the thing to do is pick out some dates that would be convenient to you. I'd like very much if you could be here when school is in session. We are in session from, I think it's April 4th on, so this gives you some idea of time. Anyway, we can settle the business of plane fare as time goes on, and we can uncover some of these deals that seem so prevalent now. But we have a lovely apartment here in the school's alumni house or guest house, and this would be available to you. I would really hope you would be able to and want to spend some time with our boys, especially some of the younger boys, because I just think you could tell them in a very short period of time the great things about rowing and add so much to their lives and obviously to our program. Anyway, this would be part of your stay, but obviously you have to see more of the states than just Kent, Connecticut, although I can't imagine why anybody would want to see any more than that. No, seriously, but what I'd love to do is arrange it so you could get around, possibly using universities and so forth as jumping off spots, go from school to school or place to place within reason and see something of the United States and the schools and universities you've seen competing at Henley. So let's go on and start planning on these grounds. And we can start firming things up more in the next exchange. I'll close for now, sending love to you both, and just the fondest wishes possible for a joyous holiday season. I think we might even get fairly reasonable using this machine, and I do think it's a great way to exchange a lot of ideas and possibly a little knowledge from this side in exchange for a lot of knowledge from your side. I'll turn this over to the other members of the family for a moment, and I'll say goodbye and God bless you.